Yes. Yep. Good afternoon and welcome back to Milwaukee, host city for the Republican National Convention. This is a special presentation of Here and Now's 2024 election coverage. We're coming to you live from Panther Arena, Media Row in downtown Milwaukee. I'm Zach Schultz, senior political reporter for Here and Now, and I am joined yet again, Bill McCosh and Scott Ross. Thank you again for coming back. It is day four.
This is it, the finale. Yeah.
All right, last night, day three, usually the VP's night. How do you think J.D. Vance did introducing himself to a new audience to watch him for the first time?
I think he did well. He's not a rah-rah speaker. He gave his backstory very matter-of-fact. Some today have called it workmanlike. I would agree with that. His job was to connect with working people and people who think that their government has forgotten about them. And I think he did an excellent job last night. His position will be clearly a Big Ten candidate. He's to go after Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin. I think most of your viewers know the Penn State, the Big Ten now runs from New York City all the way to Washington, the state of Washington and California. So I think he's going to add to the ticket. He's going to have to continue to introduce himself. Folks don't know him. Even if they've read Hillbilly Elegy or seen the movie, last night was their first real chance to get to hear him speak. And I think the next 110 days will prove whether or not he's going to add or not.
So is this the further reinvention of J.D. Vance? Because his story has changed in his time in the public's eye.
Yeah, I mean, the fact is, and first I just want to say, the University of Pittsburgh, my alma mater, is in that band and we're in the ACC. What I saw last night was a guy who should have been introducing himself to the country, and instead he spent the first third of his speech basically apologizing for his talk about Donald Trump. The over and over kissing up to Trump, but I guess that's what Trump wants in, wants in a vice president. You know, I joked that, Trump's the big dog, and J.D. Vance rolled over, sat, fetched, and spoke.
So one thing that struck me is whether this speech could have been delivered at a Republican National Convention two decades ago.
No chance.
Because attacking NAFTA, attacking the Iraq War, I mean, does he expect that most people in the building were probably cheering for George W. Bush in 2000 and 2004, and he's the one that, well, he didn't pass NAFTA, that was Clinton, but Republicans, but also brought us into the Iraq War?
Surprisingly, the party has changed quite a bit in the last 20 years. The people in the building responded phenomenally well to J.D. Vance last night, and much to my chagrin, they responded reasonably well to Matt Gaetz. So I think the party has changed. Those who attended the convention 20 years ago, there's probably a lot fewer of them than one might expect. I went to a convention 20 years ago in Houston, Texas in 1992, and I think the party has changed. I think it's more welcoming to working people and to the middle class, and I think that's a good thing. We're not the country club Republicans anymore. It's more of the meat and potatoes working class party.
But when it comes to talking about NAFTA, I mean, how much of this is a complete reinvention is fair in this political party in this era?
I mean, again, truth went out the window, in 2015 when Donald Trump went down the escalator in his hotel. Fact is, the Republican Party has never been more anti-union, anti-worker, and they got a guy who's, lipstick on a pig, basically, because this guy, has been an ardent, in the year he's been in elected office, he's been always supporting of the Republicans' anti-union stuff. The guys who financed him, Peter Thiel, the billionaire who put $15 million into his Senate race, is one of the most rabid anti-union people in the country. And in fact, unions are what made Peter Thiel say he doesn't necessarily think democracy is going to work anymore. So it is complete fabrication. When they get out on the trail, it's very clear. Democrats stand up for working families. Republicans are in the pocket of the billionaires, which is why they gave $2 trillion in tax cuts to rich people and corporations with the first Trump tax cuts. And now they're promising $5 trillion more that our viewers are all going to be paying for.
Let's not forget, Donald Trump ran against NAFTA in 2016, and he won. And working people understand what NAFTA is. They were sold a bill of goods back in the early 90s that somehow this was going to be good for them. It wasn't good for them. Donald Trump renegotiated a deal. It's now called the Canada-Mexico Agreement, which is far better for working people in the United States. But there's more work to be done, and Trump is already talking about that. Whether it's China thinking about opening an auto manufacturing plant in Mexico, he said, yeah, well, good luck. We're going to put tariffs on those cars if you try and take those jobs away from our people. So this is an America First party. It's an America First agenda. And the party's changed dramatically. And I think that's one of the reasons they're doing so well.
Ironically, in 2016, Russ Feingold also was talking about NAFTA, and that didn't help him in the fall, even though it helped Donald Trump.
Right. Well, Feingold lost in 10.
But he also ran again in 16.
Well, true. That's true. I think people believe something different would happen with NAFTA 20 years ago, including your former boss, Ron Kind. There was a bipartisan agreement to do it. At the end of the day, it did ship jobs overseas.
So one of the other issues that came up a lot last night was immigration. We saw posters that were handed out by the Trump campaign that said mass deportation. That's also a different, interesting stance to see at a Republican National Convention, to see in the public spotlight, because those aren't words that most political parties wanted to be connected to in the past.
Yeah, I mean, it's repellent. You know, it is the worst in our politic. You know, we are all human beings, and we had a guy on stage last night with the governor from Texas,
Greg Abbott,
who literally put razor wire in the Rio Grande, which caused the death of children. Like, that's just beyond, you know, and the rhetoric has continued. Again, build the wall, Mexico's gonna pay for it. You know, that was 8 years ago, still don't have a wall, good. Mexico's certainly not paying for it. They told us, you know, to go pound salt.
Greg Abbott may be the most responsible individual for making immigration a national issue. You had cities like New York City, Chicago, San Francisco, who were sanctuary cities. He started busing migrants there. All of a sudden, their position started to change, right? When they were busting at the seams with migrants, they didn't care when they were in Texas or Arizona. Once they were on their doorstep, things started to change. So I give Greg Abbott a lot of credit for making this a national issue.
When are people going to make a connection, though, between immigration as a policy issue about border versus the economy? Because just yesterday, I was walking by, and there was one of the big hospitality party tents set up for Republicans right outside the Pfizer was being torn down by a group of Hispanic laborers. And they provide a lot of the work that goes completely unnoticed by the majority of Americans. And many of them are not here legally doing this work for lower wages that is what's needed to produce our economy.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, the hypocrisy knows no bounds. And again, when you're talking about human beings, you know, just the use of the term illegal, for instance, nobody's illegal, you know? Nobody's illegal. They're human beings. And we have to have a rational and reasonable immigration policy because immigrants have built America. We're a country of immigrants, you know? A lot of us, if we're not Native American, weren't born, you know, our ancestors came here, so it is incredibly important that we're, you know, cognizant of the fact of the impact of immigrants on our economy, and that we're standing up for them and not that grotesque display yesterday.
Is this something that is a campaign issue but won't be a policy issue in your eyes once we get in, if Trump makes it back into office?
No, it'll be a policy, no question about that. Trump's been very clear that he will deport migrants.
Mass deportation.
Who are here illegally.
It's going to be a mass deportation.
He's made no bones about that. This isn't a hide-and-seek kind of thing. He says that publicly.
Are the people ready to actually see that as opposed to see it on a signboard or talk about it?
Well, Trump's leading in all the national polls, and he's leading in all the 7 swing states by as many as 7 points. So it appears the people are responding to what he has to say.
One other thing about J.D. Vance and the issue of immigration. We were introduced to his wife last night, who he met at Yale. She is, for everyone who doesn't know, she was born in the United States, but she is of Indian descent. And it was just a couple days ago that a lot of Trump supporters found out for the first time that J.D. Vance's wife is not a white woman. And Nick Fuentes, a white nationalist who has dined with Donald Trump, went on his show and talked about how can J.D. Vance define white Christian nationalism when he's not married to a white woman. Is that an internal conflict the Republican Party has to deal with, or is that just something that gets shoved aside?
No. And we probably will get to this at some point today, but this whole Project 2025, Chris LaCivita, the campaign manager, was interviewed by Politico today on a panel. He got asked about that, and he said it was BS. That's not our platform. Our platform is Agenda 47. I would say the same thing about this. There are people that may have different views than Donald Trump about this issue. Donald Trump has no issue about Usha Vance. And I thought she was extremely eloquent last night, very impressive. And I think a lot of female voters across the country are going to relate to her.
What's your take on why is it that these white nationalists are attracted to the Republican Party and not the Democratic Party? Is that something we should be looking at more closely?
I think it's something Democrats should be very proud of. You know, the fact that, you know, we're not attracting that sort of, I mean, again, remember Trump's speech when he came down June 2015 about rapists and immigrants? It's just disgusting. And it's normal. And the problem with it is it keeps normalizing because of the echo chambers which exist, you know, amongst a lot of media outlets, and we're in the midst of a bunch here, that the fact that you can act as though hating other people because of who they are, you know, whether it's immigrants, whether it's, you know, LGBT trans. I mean, we know how much anti-trans stuff has gone on in the Republican Party in the last year and a half. Our school boards are inundated with the Moms for Liberty who want to ban books, you know, particularly here in Wisconsin where 481 books have been banned since this movement started. And so my point is this. Racism has no place in politics. It certainly has no place in the Democratic Party, and I hope that one day it won't have any place in the Republican Party
either. Donald Trump has made this the most welcoming party in my lifetime.
And the optics show that from the stage, but
100%.
What about the policy that is being proposed by the politicians?
I think his policy will match his rhetoric, and people will be...
Does he have a track record of having his policy match his rhetoric?
When he can get it done, right? I mean, at the end of the day, you still have a Congress. You have to get things done. Sadly, our presidents can do too much with executive order, and I say that to either party. I don't agree with that part of the system. And I'm sure there'll be executive orders on day one when Donald Trump's in place. But if Republicans get both houses of the Congress, which if the election were today, they would, I think they'll pass his agenda.
Republicans had control of the Congress with Donald Trump in the White House for 2 years. They passed a $2 trillion tax cut for rich people and corporations. You know, and just back to the Project 2025 thing, 240 people are affiliated with the Trump campaign who are also affiliated with the creation of Project 2025.
So you mentioned polling just a little while ago, and there was an Emerson poll that WisPolitics reported about that showed Trump up, but to me the more interesting thing was that 53% of people polled said they want Joe Biden out of the race, but 45% of people said they want Trump out of the race as well. Is that high a percentage of people just want a whole new slate of candidates?
Yeah, but you can't always give it what you want. I mean, as of today,
we have
a binary choice. You know, beef or chicken. Beef being Donald Trump, chicken being Joe Biden. You can order dessert if you want, but you're going to go to bed hungry. You're not getting it. So these are the choices we have today. I think, Zach, that you opened up a bigger topic, which is the disarray on the Democratic side. We now have reports this morning that former President Barack Obama is asking Joe Biden to reconsider whether or not he's the strongest candidate for the Democrats. This is unbelievable. We are 110 days from a general election. We have never in our lifetime or in the history of this great country seen a party who claims to be for democracy pushing their guy over the cliff with 110 days to go.
Is that air quotes on democracy?
It is air quotes on democracy because this party will not be able to say for the next 110 days, if they short 14 million Democratic voters and take away their voice and they do a backroom deal to push Joe Biden out of the way and replace him with somebody else, they will never be able to talk about democracy again.
I'll tell you what we will do. We're going to make sure that we have the best candidate to defeat Donald Trump and defeat Republicans in the fall. And the one thing we won't do, if things don't go our way, is storm the Capitol, you know, cause the death of five
law enforcement officers and injure 140 others while trying to undo the results of a democratically decided election, which top Republicans were involved in, including our Congressman Derek Van Orten. And top to bottom, Trump has said he's going to pardon them if he gets in there. So people who broke the law.
That's a change of position. Yesterday he said Biden's the nominee. Today he's not ruling out a backroom deal to push him over the side.
So is it, if he steps down, is it a backroom deal? Because everything in politics is a backroom deal.
There's no such thing as just stepping down. They are publicly humiliating this man who spent 55 years in public life. He knows that.
But and you say he holds the card. That also includes Republicans.
No, it doesn't.
Do you think they want him out?
I think the Democrats want him out. We'll take him. We'll take Harris. Doesn't matter to us. Doesn't matter to us. But the notion that they set up this process to protect him from any primary opponents and now realize after they chose to have an early debate that that was the biggest campaign mistake in the past 248 years in the United States of America, now they're trying to get rid of the guy. That's not democracy. That's influence peddling.
So how much of this, Scott, comes from pressure from the media and Democrats in higher positions being pressured and feeling that pressure, then therefore pressuring Biden, versus a groundswell that's legitimate from the people?
I mean, the thing that I can't understand is, you know, Democrats get to vote and they get to choose a candidate, and I don't understand why they suddenly can't do that. You know, these are tough times.
They did.
These
are primaries.
These are tough times for the president. That's for sure. And again, you know, layer on layer, and then yesterday COVID. These are challenging times. The best thing that Democrats have going for us is that the country has lived through a Donald Trump administration, and it was a disaster top to bottom. We lost 3 million jobs. Under Biden, we gained 16 million. Under Biden, we gained 21 million more people got health care. We had, you know, infrastructure here in the state of Wisconsin, $7 billion in infrastructure, you know, that all Republicans opposed. You know, so that's where, you know, that's where I come down on this. I come down on this is that the people know what the record is of both of these candidates. They intently know what the record is, and they're going to choose the side that both stands up for them and has results, and it's the Democrats.
Your viewers will get this. This is like a wedding. Democrats sent out the invitations. They paid the deposits. Joe Biden was going to be, they were going to marry Joe Biden. Now they are leaving him at the altar, and they have no answer as to where this goes next. My advice to Democrats is be careful what you wish for, right? This could turn out a lot worse than going with Joe Biden.
I am for sure going to let the Republican Party, you know, whose top guy, you know, has three spouses and, you know, was convicted of 34 felonies related to hush money illegally paid to a porn star he had sex with while his third wife was recovering from her having his fifth child. I will let the Republicans talk about marriage for sure.
Let's talk about Trump, because that is the keynote for tonight. He is the final speaker. According to the schedule, he's listed for an hour and a half. Are we going to get sharks and batteries, or are we going to get unity Trump?
I think we're going to get unity, but we'll see, right? There's got to be a few razor blades in there. It's Donald Trump, right? And the party loves that. So he has said that he rewrote the speech, that it'll be more about uniting the party and the country. I expect that to be the case mostly. But will there be some sharp barbs in there? Sure. And that's when the place will explode. I think that Donald Trump's going to blow the roof off the Fiserv Forum tonight, and I'm looking forward to it.
I mean, listen, they promised unity, and by the second speaker on day one, they had broken that promise. You know, what are the themes for them? The themes are, you know, make America wealthy again. Well, their plan is $5 trillion in tax cuts for rich people, including Diane Hendricks, who's speaking tonight, the everyday American.
We'll get to that.
They want a safe, but they assault democracy. They attack our rights. They want to undo the Constitution, and they want one man, Donald Trump, to be above the law. And then the third thing is they want us to be strong, and they want us to be strong by capitulating to Vladimir Putin and doing what he wants, which both Donald Trump and J.D. Vance will do if they are in power.
So the unity thing to me seemed, on the first day it was unity for America, but by that first night or the second day for sure, it was unity within the GOP. Do you think that's more important for Donald Trump than unity for America?
No, he's got unity within the GOP. I've never seen anything like it. Now I think the next challenge is uniting America. And honestly, if I were giving him advice, you know, sort of that stretch goal, that thing you might not want to say, I'd tonight consider saying I'll pardon Joe Biden on day one.
For what?
Crimes that the business dealings with his son Hunter. I would say tonight that we're going to put partisan differences behind us, and I'm going to pardon Joe Biden on day one.
Do you think Donald Trump pardons himself and his children before he pardons Joe Biden?
No. Don't think it'll be necessary.
Why is that?
Because the Supreme Court changed the law to make him immune from prosecution because it's corrupt.
Yeah, and I think the hush money case is going to go away in September.
So we've already seen Miami being thrown out, but it's being appealed. There's still other cases that are pending appeal.
Yeah.
But you think he won't even need to pardon himself?
I don't.
Trump promised he would be a dictator on day one, and you are seeing the foundation for that being laid.
So one of the other things that we heard a number of speakers this week say is talking kind of the 2016 version of Donald Trump, of he didn't have to run. Well, there were a lot of people saying he did need to run to avoid prison, to avoid prosecution in some of these cases. Is that fair to say he didn't need to run, that he could just, you know, safely retire and golf all he wanted to?
Yeah, do you think all of these things would have happened if he hadn't run? I mean, do you think he would have
been...
Well,
some of these cases started years ago.
Oh, no. These cases all happened in the last 18 months. They had 3 years, or in some cases, the one in New York, that goes all the way back to 2016. And they had to do some mental gymnastics just to overcome the statute of limitations on that. So these things have been sitting around, cold cases, for a very long time. They all came together in the last 18, 24 months. So he did not need to do any of this.
If they were cold cases, why wouldn't they get them prosecuted early so then he would, as
they
a convicted
been tossed
felon,
out.
He could.
So the FEC, for example, on this stupid case in New York said, there is no crime here. So Alvin Bragg had to make some unbelievable mental gymnastics and then convince a jury of Trump haters that he was guilty of it.
Will the convictions matter in the fall, even if they are thrown out? Will people still be thinking of them? Will Democrats, moderates, independents, those who are not already attracted to Donald Trump in that way?
I think swing voters don't want somebody in the White House who has 34 felonies. As simple as that. You know, it is as simple as that. Talk about crime, and you got a guy who's got 34 felonies and would be facing prison if not for a Supreme Court where he put, you know, half of the members who decided to allow him to have a lifetime immunity, a get-out-of-jail-free card.
One of the things that's been overlooked, in my opinion, is foreign policy. We have not heard very much, other than J.D. Vance saying he now opposes the Iraq war, that talking about Ukraine, talking about Putin, even talking too much about Israel and their... their war in the Gaza Strip. Does that need to be brought up tonight? Do you think Donald Trump will address that?
Yeah, I think there are huge differences on the Israel issue with Gaza, on the Ukraine issue. Absolutely. I think Donald Trump's going to show the differences between his vision and whomever the Democrats ultimately nominate as their party. Because at the end of the day, Democrats agree on Biden's agenda, so it really doesn't matter if he's the guy or not.
Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, is we know that Donald Trump has been in the pocket of Vladimir Putin. You know, there's no doubt about it. And the fact is that Democrats, under Joe Biden and his leadership, have charted a path that respects foreign policy, that allows us to be respected in the world again. You know, and the reason that we're in this mess is because Donald Trump can't say no to attention. That's why he's running.
We got a commander-in-chief who can't even stay awake long enough to go to meetings with German Chancellor. Come on. We are not respected.
There was video on the first day of Donald Trump nodding off at the RNC.
No, he was praying. Oh. I know you don't understand that, but he was praying.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
There were a lot of camera shots of him praying then.
Yeah.
And in the courtroom, a lot of praying.
So what is your thought then on Ukraine? Because it was Biden, whether he was awake or not, Biden is the one who got all the aid passed that has allowed Ukraine to fight back against Vladimir Putin in Russia. Mm-hmm. Does that continue under Trump, who has been very cozy with Vladimir Putin in the past?
I would say there's going to need to be some answers for all the money that's going to Ukraine. Where is that money going? How is it being used? I mean, that's where our party is today. They are deeply concerned about blank checks. For foreign wars, Donald Trump didn't get us into any conflict. He got us out of conflicts. Joe Biden's got us in at least two right now, possibly more coming. So I would say Zelensky's going to have to explain how he's using that money. I think the United States will do their part. There's no question in my mind we'll continue to be a leader in NATO. But Donald Trump is going to force those other countries to pay their fair share.
You know, and I think this is where the influence of the vice presidential pick comes in on this, because there has not been a bigger champion for getting out of, you know, for us taking our assistance away from Ukraine than J.D. Vance. You know, he's been at the top tip of the spear on that, like he's been with abortion, you know, which is, it remains a top issue in this election. He's the most extreme when it comes to that issue of anybody who's ever been on a national ticket. You know, he wants a national abortion ban. He wants women to be second-class citizens. And if Donald Trump is reelected with this guy, that's what's going to happen. We're going to have a nationwide abortion ban.
Sticking to foreign policy, though, is it fair to say that Donald Trump is an isolationist? Are we reverting back? Is that where the populist message is in America?
He thinks we ought to take care of our people first. You can call that isolationist if you want, or you can call it a leader for the people in this country. I mean, at the end of the day, some have said since Saturday that the Secret Service budget is too low. They don't have enough resources. Now, why then are we sending money to Ukraine instead of taking care of something as important as that here in the United States? Why is our education system, especially in urban areas, falling apart when we're sending all this foreign aid away? I mean, yeah, there are priorities.
Do you think there are Republicans in Congress that want to send more federal dollars to local schools?
Too soon to tell. No, I don't think they want more federal dollars. I think they view education as a local issue.
But education then wouldn't be competing with federal foreign aid.
Well, it does, though. There are, whether it's the student loan forgiveness, that's $160 billion. Whose money did that come? Where did that come from? Right?
It came from the same place that the $867 billion in PPP loans that were forgiven.
Well,
lawyers. Let me just say this. When you're talking about not being able to finance the Secret Service, which I heard the same thing. I think people are talking about the fact that this is a challenge with the Secret Service. Sunset the $2 trillion in tax cuts for the rich that Trump wants to extend to $5 trillion.
There, we're making it a priority. How can it not be a priority? Right? Let's do a little prioritization of the federal budget. Well, be a good idea.
Speaking of Secret Service, President Biden did authorize Secret Service protection for RFK Jr., who is the third-party candidate. What is his impact, if anything, in this race in November?
Well, he's financed by Republicans. He's supposed to be a spoiler in states, but I think Democrats and swing voters are a little smarter than RFK Jr. You know, they support vaccines, and I think that they'll not support RFK Jr.
I think his impact is less and less every day. I think after he chose his running mate, who I can't even name, I know it's a female from California, his campaign sort of ended. He's still out there. He still polls at 6 to 10%, depending on the state. But I think over the next 110 days, he'll have less of an impact.
I mean, we've seen historically that third-party candidates do poll well over the spring and the summer and up to the conventions, and then they end up getting at best 2 to 3%, going back to 2016.
Which was enough in Wisconsin. Jill Stein getting 2% was enough to prohibit Hillary Clinton from winning here.
Do you think RFK Jr., I mean, we saw the phone call that he had with Donald Trump. Do you think
RFK's guys leaked.
Is he part of a Republican plot to try and...
No.
Does he take voters from?
The polling would say both. Maybe 1.5 to 1 for Joe Biden versus Trump, but the polling says it's fairly even.
Any other third-party candidates that we need to think about? I mean, there are more on the ballot this time than in 2020. The Green Party has one. There's some other names out there.
I think we're interested in who the Democrat nominee is going to be first. Let's settle that first.
So we have one
name. Let the coup finish.
We have a nominee
on the Democratic side.
We have a candidate right now. It is the President of the United States, who's been incredibly successful. He's done the job. If he wins in November, he'll do the job great as well. We know what we got with Donald Trump.
All right. There is one other topic you guys already teased, and that is Diane Hendricks giving a speaking slot. She's not in prime time. For those that don't know, she is the owner of ABC Supply. She is a billionaire from Beloit. She is listed as an everyday American. And I know what your response is, Scott, to her being listed as that. But doesn't she deserve a bigger title than that? Because she's a very successful businesswoman and an entrepreneur and a philanthropist.
I think she'll talk about that tonight. And her story literally is her and her husband, Ken, her late husband, Ken, started with nothing. And the story goes, they couldn't get a loan from a bank from any bank in Janesville. They ultimately got a loan from a bank in Beloit, and which is why ABC Supply is in Beloit, and why Diane has invested so much in revitalizing that city over the last 20 years. But they had nothing. They literally had nothing. Ken had a high school degree, I believe she did at the time too. She's now got advanced degrees, but she's now one of the richest women in the world. So that is a true American story that you can start from zero and be this mega success. And I think
deeply,
it's great.
And deeply connected to Wisconsin Republican politics.
Yep.
Absolutely, absolutely. And Bill has said something correct. She is one of the richest women in the world. She is the richest woman in Wisconsin. And what has she done with that money? She is Scott Walker's biggest donor. Simple. We also know, you know, again, we're talking about like the Republican outreach to labor. You know, she was the architect of Walker's takeover or his dropping the bomb on unions. We knew from the leaked video where he talked to her about divide and conquer that led not only to the canceling of union rights for public employees, but then with right to work of private sector employees. And then the last thing is, you know, she and the two billionaire Ulines spent about $30 to $40 million for Ron Johnson in racist ads to put Ron Johnson back in office after he publicly extorted a tax break out of the Trump tax cuts that benefited himself and those three. I don't know, it was an S corp, C corp. I'm not, but it was that. But that.
She uses her money to make her voice heard, no doubt about that. And thankfully, for us, it's on the conservative
with
side.
With the same kind of impact that
no different than George Soros on your side.
The impact that any everyday American would have.
All right, we have just a couple seconds left. Give me your quick wrap up of what you are hoping to hear from tonight.
Well, first of all, I want to get a T-shirt that says Mama on it, which is J.D. Vance's grandma. I thought that those stories were phenomenal. I want to hear Donald Trump give his vision for the next 4 years. That's what I'm looking forward to, whether it takes him 60, 80, or 90 minutes to get all the way through it. We couldn't be more excited. My whole family's going to be here tonight, and should be an awesome night for the Republican Party and for the state of Wisconsin.
What are you listening for?
I mean, what I'm most concerned of is that he would be as aggressive as he has been out on the campaign trail and say those things that are not just false, but incendiary. You know, certainly some of the calls for violence that he's done. I don't want to see that. It has no place in politics. We talked about that on Monday. So I'm going to be looking for that. I'm going to be looking for what's he saying and, you know, will any of these dog whistles that he, you know, does to the white nationalists be actual, you know, loud calling cards?
All right. Bill, Scott, thank you for the week. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciated having you here. All right, and thank you for watching our special presentation of Here and Now's 2024 election coverage. Tune in tonight for PBS's final night of coverage of the convention, where Here and Now will have another update on the day's events. And finally, join us on Friday to wrap up the week with a special one-hour presentation of Here and Now starting at 7 o'clock instead of our normal 7:30. I'm Zach Schultz. Have a great day. We will see you on the air tomorrow. Thank you.